Lennon and I had breakfast in bed, and then I spent the morning cleaning my desk. Whatever happens when I'm not here. And then Barbara Ward, Lady Jackson, arrived around noon, just in time to sit down to lunch with Lyndon, Clark Clifford, Abe Fortas, and me. Barbara was ecstatic about the plans for beautification. She told us she had listened to the inaugural speech with President Tubman of Liberia. On the radio, of course, there's no TV. She described him as quite a guy. It all added up to a feeling, or my own synthesis is, that he's the most seasoned, reliable, stable of the leaders in that troubled continent. She's invited for the dinner tonight and is our house guest. After lunch, I went down to the library for the presentation of a White House guidebook translated into 7 languages for foreign visitors. It was presented by Mrs. Dudley Owen, chairman of this committee, the Hospitality and Information Service, and appeared in Arabic, French, Italian, Japanese, Korean, Russian, and Spanish. With Mrs. Owen was a Mrs. Song from the Korean Embassy, who is in the international group that used to be mine. We had last been together at lunch at Mrs. Gerald Ford's in the backyard by the swimming pool before November 22nd. And there was a young boy named Guy from one of the African republics, a French-speaking one, who had used the guidebook in French, and a Mrs. Nadal of the Embassy of Argentina who had used it in Spanish, and Mrs. Peter Bing, who had taken the trip through the White House 7 times, writing down copious notes on the way, then getting them translated into all the languages. It's all the service of this, so that foreign visitors to the White House can really learn more about us than just what their eye can take in. And there in the group were 2 old friends, the Bruce Lansdales, from the American Farm School in Thessalonica, Greece. They brought me a framed picture in tile of what the LBJ family would look like in Greek costumes. The rest of the day was taken up with beauty parlor and studying the list, those who would come to the dinner in honor of the Vice President, the Chief Justice, and the Speaker, and going over the little introduction I would make of the Hume Cronins by entertainment. I had my hair done up on the top of my head, probably the last two-raw for a while, since it must be cut, and wore my green chiffon huletar. Bess and I had worked out the list of people who came upstairs in a different and intimate fashion this time. For the Vice President and Mrs. McCormick, since none of their children could be here, and what a shame, we had asked their governor, Mr. Rolvog, and his wife, a Texan. The Speaker and Mrs. McCormick, that is their special guest, his nephew, Eddie, and his young wife, a very attractive and handsome couple. He told someone tonight that he plans to run for governor of Massachusetts next time up. He's the apple of the Speaker's eye. And for Chief Justice and Mrs. Warren, the John Daly's, she's one of their daughters, and another daughter, Mrs. Clementi. There was no Robin and Angie. The first time I have felt the gap of their absence. Then we went downstairs, the 8 of us, Hubert and I following Lyndon and Muriel, with a thrilling hail to the chief, had our pictures made at the step, and into the East Room, where 8 in line made a great difference in the time that it took for about 178 people to file by. More than any other dinner, this is a meeting of the government, and for that reason, a family affair. For the Chief Justice, we had asked all the court, and the Blacks, the Douglases, the Clarks, Justice Harlan alone, the Brennans, the Stewarts, the Whites, the Goldbergs were there. And also, I'm delighted to say, former Justice and Mrs. Reed. The cabinet was somewhat decimated by the virus, with McNamara, Rusk, and Dillon being in bed, the Postmaster General and Mrs. Grunowski, indefatigable Udalls, gay young Freemans, and the Wirtzes were there. And the Celebrezes, he just fresh up from the flu, the newest member, Attorney General Katzenbach and his wife, and all the leadership of the House and Senate in full panoply. Senator Carl Hayden, President Pro Tempore, Majority Leader Mike Mansfield, and Russell Long and George Smathers, and Senator and Mrs. Everett McKinley Dirksen, Affable Tom, and Betty Keekle, Manny Sellers, Dean of the House, Gerald Ford and Charlie Halleck, present and recently defeated, and Les Ahrens, Mihail Boggs, and Carl Albert, and then a good deal of staff. From the press of the blonde Otis Chandlers of the Los Angeles Times, our old friends, the Epphoyts of the Denver Post, the young Arthur Sulzbergers of the New York Times, the Texas representation, interesting variety, the young and attractive James Ling of Dallas, who made a lot of money in a short career, the young and attractive Jerry Williams of Austin, he's a professor in the university and she is a lawyer also, and a capable Democratic politician, the sort you have on your list for any women appointees, and Dean Bob Story of Dallas, longtime worker in the vineyard of peace and justice in our racial relations. And among old friends, the Ed Wisels of New York, and how glad I am that Alice will face what must be a hurdle of any social entertainment. Abe Fortas alone, and the Clark Cliffords, Wagner Carr, Attorney General of Texas, was there also. And because I've been reading so much about the beautification plans of our administration, I was very pleased to meet Charles Haar, the chairman of the Task Force on Beauty. He's from the Harvard Law School. And, of course, the Lawrence Rockefellers, the first name you turn to when recreation or beautification is mentioned. Since the Chief Justice was one of the honorees, there was some top brass from the world of law. Dean and Mrs. Irwin Griswold of the School of Law of Harvard, Dean and Mrs. Paige Keaton of the School of Law of the University of Texas, and Dean and Mrs. Frank Newman of the School of Law of the University of California, David Merrick, producer of Hello, Dolly, and also of next week's show, The Roar of the Crowd, The Smell of the Grease Paint, coming to the National, was among the guests, and also the Jackie Robinsons of the sports world. These dinners offer up a potpourri of American life, and I try to savor it all as they come down the line. In the blue room for dinner, I had the speaker and Mrs. McCormick on my right and Mr. Justice Black on my left. We have a special bond, Mr. Justice Black and I. We are both Alabamians. We love government service and are aware of its pangs and its joys. And we've both had a bit of a hand in the making of Lyndon, or so I imagine without ever saying. Our imaginative Bess had provided seafood Golden Gate for the Chief Justice and chicken Bay State for the Speaker and Minnesota Wild Rice for Hubert and Trappist Cheese for Bess Abel of Kentucky. That Trappist Cheese is made by the monks. It's delicious. Clark and Lindy Boggs helped make things gay at our table. I talked to the Speaker about legislation. That was the moment of exultation when the violins, the singing violins, came in following the dessert, and then the toast, emphasizing among us all that this was us, the government, a moment of unity, fellow artisans, and then out into the hall for coffee, and to the East Room for entertainment. I had promised reluctantly to introduce them, and I'd better say no next time because I did a halting, poor, dull job of it. They were Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy. I'll never forget her. In the role of Blanche DuBois in Streetcar Named Desire, they gave readings as varied as Dorothy Parker, a sonnet from Shakespeare. Great range and enchanting, but too long. I could see my husband looking at his watch. It always makes me flinch for the entertainers. Then we danced in the foyer. Two of the honor couples sang a fairly early good night, and Hubert and Muriel sang until we were gone. I had a good dance with George Smathers and Russell Long, and enjoyed a moment of dancing and talking with Dean Eugene Rostow of the Yale School of Law, the other Rostow. It's Walt that we're used to here in Washington. And, of course, with our Texans, Wagoner Carr and Jerry Williams and Bob Story. And some young people who had come to fix the lights. Bess is wonderful about always remembering the people who work with the entertainment or the decorations and don't get in on the glamour itself. It was a good evening, and the best part of dancing is that it mixes people up and gives a reason for spending a few minutes with one and then another and then another. I was so sorry that Lucy, in bed with the flu, couldn't even come down. And Linda, battling with homework, declined. It's hard for me to imagine having so much of this world's feast of interesting people laid in front of you, but you sit upstairs with a book instead of coming down, spend an hour with the varied and glittering names on a list like tonight. It was a good evening, and I went upstairs a little after one, satisfied with everybody but me, and wishing I had not tried to stand on my feet and say, "Here they are, the Hume Cronins." But delighted that they reminded me of Ogden Nash, Dorothy Parker, whom I used to be able to quote, and Edna St. Vincent Millay, 30 minutes at a time, and determined to meet a new poet I'd never read her before, Phyllis McGinley, because they did, for an encore, a bit of her work called "Where in the World Did the Children Vanish?" which I guess fits Linda and Lucy.